I don't have to do much today for you to feel filled after that dinner. Isn't that delicious?
Yes.
I'm Dale Jankard, retired as a pastor and as a psychotherapist, had a half-time private practice and half-time as a pastor. And I've spent my life really focusing on how do we find the practical implications in the whole understanding of the gospel and apply it to our everyday life. So these sessions will be about that. It may stretch some ideas you have about life, and it's under the theme, far more is possible than you can imagine. And tonight I want to focus on prayer, and certainly the bold and challenging commands that Jesus makes or offers about prayer. Ask and it shall be done. And then he says, if you have faith, you can move mountains. And so what I want to explore is what are some of the ranges of possibility. It's in the context of some new understandings of quantum physics that has helped overturn some of our very limiting Newtonian ideas when we thought of a body as essentially an it. We tended to think I'm here and God is there, and I think it really limited us in sensing the interaction between who I am and what God is. We almost had the sense that we could be who we are apart from God. And just to, in a kind of a brief metaphor, give you an idea of what I dealt with the other day, and that is I likened our relationship to God like the relationship of a television set. If you have a television set sitting here, it is not a television set without a sending station. And so I would pose that you are not who you are apart from God. That as Jesus says, that humans shall live not by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And so I've been sharing the idea that maybe God is always saying the word now that becomes you, that word becomes flesh. So this relationship with God becomes a very dynamic, active kind of relationship. That we're a happening, not an it. And that we are shaped by word. And quantum physics is beginning to open some mysteries, saying that what we're made of is bursts of energy, and between those bursts, what exists. And we may say that purpose exists. So anyway, that's creating a framework. Another piece of where we've been working is Larry Dossey, a physician, has done a lot of research on the effectiveness of prayer, the effectiveness of intention, and he said when he started he expected to find two or three studies on the effectiveness of prayer. Instead, he said, I found 150 studies, and he said the scientific data is increasing that prayer makes a significant difference. Not only in healing people, but they've done studies on praying for mice that were sick, and those prayed for seem to do better than those not prayed for. They've done research on the effect of the mind or intention on things. If you're in a good mood, your computer works better than if you're in a bad mood. And a lot of things like that. The effect of intention, prayer, he broadens it to make it comfortable for science, beyond just the idea of prayer. But he also has worked with prayer from all religious traditions. So, in some ways, the world is saying a lot more is possible than you can imagine, talking about the power and effectiveness of prayer, and they may be more open to that than oftentimes we Christians, who sometimes pray but expect very little to happen. That we are reluctant to really believe in a miracle. So that's what I want to explore with you tonight. By the way, under the theme, far more is possible than you can imagine, what is the fastest speed known to us?
Speed of light, but it's not.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Okay, you've been reading the papers. A lab in New Jersey evidently found that a pulse traveled faster than the speed of light. And of course, what we make.
What kind of pulse?
What's that?
What kind of pulse?
Well, what?
The same kind. It's
electromagnetic pulse.
It's the same kind as light, but it exists.
They were able to make it go faster. And, of course, what we don't know is what is the speed of consciousness. And this will become more and more a focus of exploration, because the effects of telepathy and so forth have been done from one room to another, and now they're doing it from one part of the world to another, and Edgar Mitchell did it from out in space, 10,000 miles away to Earth, and found it effective. So we're beginning to say, wait a minute. And the thesis that Larry Gossey works with is that consciousness or mind, we've gone through three eras. He said the first era was mind and body, kind of thinking of them as two entities. The second was the mind-body, and we've just been moving into that and getting used to that idea that the mind affects the body and the body affects the mind, and they're very interactive. And now he says we're moving into era three, and this book is about how the implications for medicine, and that is what he calls the non-local mind, that mind is not a product of the brain, mind exists. And that there is a field of mind, and that we have ways of participating in that. And what he poses is maybe that's what prayer is. That the mind of God is operative. The reign of God is at hand. God is at work, doing his creating, his redeeming, his sanctifying work. And that that mind is somehow available to us through prayer. That we can tune in to that mind, and that may begin to explain things, not only like telepathy, where we can know something that happens 2,000-3,000 miles away, but also precognition, which means that we can know an event before it happens. And that, you see, is hard to explain by anything we have in physics up to now. How do you rise above time and see into the future? So the old cause and effect linear thinking all of a sudden doesn't fit. Well, that's things we've been talking about. So if you are willing, I'd like to share with you an exercise on the ways of knowing. Jesus, he tells the disciples, a short time I will be away from you, and then a short time I'll be with you. And then he's silent. He said, you want to ask me a question, don't you? He knows. He tells them what's going to be happening. He somehow knows what will happen. And then he promises the Holy Spirit will come and guide you into all truth. So, what that means, I don't know that we really know what it means to be guided into all truth. But maybe it means opening up to different levels of knowing. And we're very familiar with our very rational figuring out mind that collects data and puts it together and figures things out. And we tend to trust and depend on that. We also know that some people seem to be intuitive, and we tended to think that maybe they just picked up subtle cues and put them together. But maybe intuition is more a tuning in to another way of knowing, a deeper way of knowing. And I've been in a workshop and had learned some techniques about this, and I shared this story with most of you earlier. But I had learned that by moving my awareness down to my hands and getting out of my figuring out mind and perceiving something with my hands, that I could receive images. Thoughts would come to me, and I wouldn't know where they would come from. They just would come. And in workshops that I've done, I've been amazed at some of the accuracy of these thoughts. My wife was doing the exercise, and my wife is a real skeptic of what I'm doing, okay? So she said, what I had her doing is that another person thought of a person they knew well, and then imaged that person standing between them, and then she was to hold her hands and to intuit about that person. And she tried to figure things out at first, and finally she just said, I can't figure anything out. And so then they were debriefing, and Ricky said, all I got was some crocheted pillow up here in the right hand of my vision. I can't imagine where that came from or what that was. And this lady said, 6 months ago, this person gave me a crocheted pillow.
I took microbiology with an Episcopal priest, and he asked a number of the students if they'd be interested in studying telepathy. And one of my friends was in her child's bedroom one day. At the time, it was her time to send to Eric, and he drew a picture of her son's bedroom down to the pattern on the wallpaper. And he didn't know where she lived, and he had never been near her home.
Okay, good example. On Friday, I'm going to do a session on healing, and we will also do an exercise that will be that very kind of thing. It's called remote viewing. Someone's looking at something, and you draw what that other person is looking at. Now, why am I doing this? I'm doing this to kind of open up our thinking. I'm not equating this to prayer. I'm not saying you have to be able to do this to pray. But I thought it'd be interesting just to explore what would happen if you're willing to try and experiment with it. To tell you why I really believe a lot happens, I'll tell you the story. I've told a lot of people so far, but it's a fun one for me. I was up in Alaska doing stress workshops, and the stewardess was coming down the aisle talking to people about their plane and hotel connections. And so I wasn't interested in reading. I decided, well, I'll just see what I can know about her by the time she gets to me. And I just held my hands down and kind of, oh, okay, let the image just come. So when she came to me, I said, I'm playing a little game. I said, I'm trying to see what I can know about you. And she kind of laughed, and I said, do you mind if I check them out with you? And she said, well, no, go ahead. And so, anyway, I said the first image that I got is a man in your life sitting at a desk with accounting papers in front of him. And she said, well, my husband is a banker, and I'm getting in the process of getting a divorce. Second image, I said, there's something wrong around your heart. She said, I'm not aware of a physical problem, but she said, I've had a lot of heartache the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. The third image, I said, is I see you taking care of two small children, and I checked and you haven't had a baby. She says, you're right. I haven't had a baby, and I'm living with my sister, helping her take care of her two small children. And the fourth image I said is that you're on your way to visit some friends in Portland, and that one of your friends' name is Laura. She said, well, you're right. I mean, you get off the plane in Portland and go visit some friends, but none of them is named Laura. And I do have a friend in Alaska named Laura. Oh, okay. I says, that was all. And she went on. I was coming off the airplane, and there she was standing for me, waiting. And, of course, she said, how did you do that? And I was talking about ways that I had done that. And as we walked into the airport, all of a sudden, a young woman came running up and gave her a big hug. And she turned to me and said, I'd like to have you meet my friend, Laura. So, no ways of explaining, and that is so far beyond, chance. It was not some vague kind of hunch. It was so specific, it happened so clearly, that's what leads me to think there's a lot more going on here than we tend to give credit for. So what I'd like to have you do now is take that piece of paper. Hopefully everyone read the sign, has a pen, a pencil, or a piece of paper. Of course, you couldn't get in the door without. And what I'd like to have you do is think of someone you know well that is not here at Holden Village, and that other people in the room would likely not know. Most of the people, if someone else knows. So just think of that. Pick a person. Okay, and now put down just some notes to yourself. Physical characteristics. Personality types. Occupation and interests. The health person. Just use shorthands, because you're going to be the one that's going to read it, so that's why I'm going this quickly. Maybe something about their setting, their house, other possessions. Hobbies. And the sex and approximate age of the person. Okay. Now, what I'd like to have you do is move the chairs and move around, fill up the center, but find a partner and sit facing the partner. And if there's another chair up here, we can get any more chairs. It'll work best if you can sit facing so that you can relax. Get that far next and just sit in silence after you've got your partner. Someone you don't know. Find someone you don't know. Sit fairly close to each other so you can hear each other. There's going to be a small room for doing this. But just tune out of those around you. And just tune in to the person that you're with. Okay, decide who's going to be one and who's going to be two. Okay, number ones, what I'd like to have you do is imagine the person that you have thought of standing between the two of you. Just present there. And there's no need for you to try to do anything, just be with the presence of that person. Let that person be present. And just let it happen. And number two, put your sheet down and bring your awareness to your breathing. And let go of all the commotion. I'm going to have you move to holding your hands open palm so that you are sensing the presence of that person with your hands. So that this is a very passive experience. There's nothing to figure out. So you just open your hands and sense the presence. And then you're going to report on the images that come to you, to your partner. And partner, affirm what you can of them that fits the person you're thinking of, and then let them know if something doesn't fit. But any piece of it that fits, let them know. So that, and that's all, and don't try to give them hints or clues. You don't need to help them. Just respond to what they say. Essentially, yes and no, that fits, that doesn't fit. That's close. Stuff like that. Okay, and you who are thinking of your person, would you share with your partner the age and sex of the person? Okay, and now the only conversation now is you reporting on images that come to you and your partner responding. Let that be your only conversation. If nothing comes to you, let that be what happens. Just stay with that. If nothing seems to be coming, it's okay. And just be open to something coming. And just notice what thoughts or images come to mind and report them.
Okay. What are some of the things you notice? Just raise your hand and let me point to you. What did you notice?
She told about my sister. She said that she liked the outdoors, which she does. She said, I see books, and my sister reads a lot. And she said she seems like a very healthy person, and I had written good health in body and mind. And there's very little that she didn't get right.
Wow, okay. Yes.
Well, my partner here was pretty sure he wasn't going to get anything, and I was pretty sure he wasn't going to get anything either.
Oh, you have a little faith.
Yeah. The first thing he said is his nickname, Bill. And I went, no. Yeah. And the next thing he said was, is he a pilot? And I thought, no, we're like not going anywhere. But then the more I thought about it, I was thinking of my son, and he finally did say son, so we connected. And then afterwards I thought, okay, the first two things that he said were really meaningful. My son has a great Uncle Bill that he loved dearly and was very close to, and his grandfather that he's close to is a pilot. So
okay.
He said those things right away. I couldn't really affirm them because it wasn't the person I was thinking of, but those were two important people in my son's life.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty cool. He doesn't even
get it. A little more faith. Other things you noticed? Yes.
Well, she said things that I had even forgotten about this person myself. Like that she said she sees water in a boat or stuff, and I forgot that she loved to sail, you know, years ago. And then she said she sees an office. And I wasn't even thinking about that, but we worked together in an office for 5 years, many years ago, you know, and just several things. But now she's in a school situation, and she said she saw young children, a young boy, and there you go.
Okay.
She's in grade school.
Okay. Yes.
Well, she's, I was thinking about our son, and she said, is he big? He's 6'8", and really a big, huge guy. And, you know, you mentioned, well, hobbies and things like that. And he doesn't have very many hobbies. Then I thought, oh, he does like to go fly fishing. He saw a fish.
Whoa.
So there were a couple things.
Okay. Yes.
She just caught my mom, who is 6,000 miles away. And I thought of the big river and smokestacks. And, you know, me, this money, I did a lot of thought of. And in fact, I'm I'm from a city that's very industrial and it does have a big river.
Ah.
Pretty amazing.
Okay. Okay, now, some of you may have came close. Some of you may have had great difficulty getting out of trying to figure it out. Because we are so oriented to that, that letting go and being receptive is very difficult for us. So that if you really were trying to figure it out, often you will miss. because if that figuring out part of the brain is working, then you're not really picking up the cues. Okay, would the others of you like to try it, the opposite?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Please take a moment and let me guide you into the process. You who are going to think of the person, just let go and imagine that person that you thought of standing between you. And there's no need to try to send signals. Just let it happen. And you who are receiving, let yourself breathe and relax and know that there's nothing that you need to try to accomplish or to do. And so move your hands down and move your awareness to your hands and sense the presence. And as you give feedback on the images that come to you, make statements. Questions are going to trap you into trying to figure it out again. So let the questions go and just report. I see this, I see this, does it fit? And let the person just say whether it fits or not. You don't even have to ask that. Okay, and now number twos, share with your partner the name and the age. Or not the name, the excuse me, the sex and the age. Sex and the age. Uh-huh. Okay.
My partner got about four or five things right off the bat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Then I bombed. It was all visual. I could visualize what the person looked like and things around, but after that,
oh, okay. Okay.
She visualized somebody I had just met 4 months ago. And new things and that I am just now learning about him. That she could visualize colored hair, questioning color of eyes, because there is a question as to his color of eyes. In fact, he likes running water, he loves waterfalls, he loves listening to those babbling brooks, he loves, I mean, things like that. That was just amazing.
And the shirt.
Okay. Oh, and the shirt, yes. She said there was a red plaid, broccoli plaid, maybe wool shirt, and it's a corduroy shirt that he loves. But we have just found out a yard sale. So, I mean, that's really
okay.
Specific.
Okay.
Very good. And the car.
Oh, yes, and he has a yellow Corvette, and she said he had a really special car, and he has the 68 yellow Corvette that says, I enjoy.
Ooh. I imagine Laura's turned up to your husband looking at a screen. And so in his big copy is computers, you know, and so that there was a connection there. But we also had some difficulty because before we started, I found out that we both know a person we have that in common.
We're both from Portland, you discovered.
Yeah.
He's a pastor, and he knows our pastor.
Yeah. And when she told me the name and sex of the person she was thinking of, I kept thinking of her pastor.
Oh.
And that was very distracting, so I was not completely present.
Had to let go of that.
And so the importance of not having preconceived ideas, mm-hmm. I mean, that is something
Okay.
So it was hard, but we managed to do it, I guess.
Good. Other things you noticed?
Our palms got really hot.
Yes.
Right.
And as long as the heat was there, you could center what you're imagining. But if you started to analyze it, you'd lose it very, very quickly and say, oh, I'm, you know, this is cool. But, and then if you took it back, you could divert your attention back to where your hands were.
Yeah. By moving your awareness to part of your body, you can warm it up and relax it. We did an exercise earlier where people did that and just let the tension go. So, what is becoming present? Letting go of all the agendas in us, which are those tensions, trying to make things happen, trying to figure it all out, trying to do it all, etc. And you can't really be present if you're that busy. So what it's about is letting go and becoming present. Which is a nice segue. What is prayer? Prayer is becoming present. And so, often I'm concerned because we bounce through the invocation as though saying the word was the invocation. To me, the word is merely a means to let go and sense the presence. And if we're not about letting ourselves be present to God and God be present to us, then they're just some words that we ran over. And so just to deal with that, for me, prayer begins by becoming present. What I'd like to have you do is think of some title for God or for Christ that you particularly like. Just let that come to your mind. And just take a moment then to say that name softly to yourself, inside or outside. Sometimes it's helpful just to say the words. And let yourself begin to sense the presence of the named one. Imaging, sensing what that name means, what it means to receive who you named. What it means to know how present that one is. Slowly let your eyes open. Just let yourself continue to know that presence here. To do that, sometimes we need to move into solitude. And so we read of Jesus, he left the crowds, he left the busyness, he went off into the hills to be alone. Also, as he talks to the Pharisees, he said, you know, don't pray in public in order to be seen, pray in secret. So one way to pray and one way to be more present, to enter into this presence, is to eliminate the distractions and let yourself just be open and present and let that be enough for a period of time. We often have an image of prayer that it is primarily verbalizing. And so to pray means to right away. And so what I'm suggesting is take a moment get present first. Tune in. And then, this does not mean that we should always pray in private. Because Jesus talks about where two of you are together and agree on something that touches what you are praying for, it will be done. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, become present, become bound together in my presence, that whatever they shall ask shall be done. So that he invites us into group prayer also, that we support one another in prayer. Like he invited his disciples to come with him into Gethsemane. Come along with me right now. I really need your support. They were kind of sleepy disciples, but he asked for it. So oftentimes we need to be together in prayer to support one another in prayer. Let me read the very familiar passages that I'd like to reflect on for the rest of our time. Matthew 7:7. Ask and it will be given to you. Search or seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who seeks finds, and for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. What does it mean to ask? Notice that he lists three different ways of praying. And they are very significant, I think. The first one is to find language to say what it is we want to say. And so, to formulate something in your mind that you want to pray for. We are invited that with the power of prayer, as I understand it, we can help create the future. That's what I hear in that. So you can get an idea of what you want the future to be like. What you really want the future to be like. And pray for it. And it will be done. The language is repeated in a number of ways. Ask and it shall be given. It will be done. So, asking can be of two different kinds. First kind of prayer of asking is to the tuning in process with God. So once we have become present to God, then we're invited to confess. And to really open up about those things that get in the way of our relationship with God. God, I'm so worried about this stuff that I haven't had time for your concerns. Lord, I'm really wanting this, or I'm wanting this. Lord, forgive me for the way I reacted in that situation. To take time to ask for forgiveness is a way of helping you to let go what has happened in the past. Now, why is that significant? What happened in the past is not affecting you now. Listen to that. What happened in the past is not affecting you now. It is the way you are remembering it. The remembering is a here and now process going on. And what we often do is try to complete it in some way that helps us feel comfortable. A homely example of that is if you heard someone going to bed upstairs and you hear one shoe drop, what do you do?
Well, you get a second one, unless you get one leg.
You begin to invest energy in needing to have that completed the way you think it has to be. That's what we do with a lot of the stuff in the past, is we run it over and over, feeling guilty or feeling resentful or wishing it had been different and hanging on to it, investing energy into it, and it saps the very life out of us. We spend so much time thinking about what happened in the past or what's going to happen in the future isn't affecting us, it's the way we are anticipating. So we tend to think and worry about the future has to be this way, or I'm nobody, or life isn't worth living, or whatever. So forgiveness is very much related to health, because it is the way you let go of wasting energy on the past. Another way of saying it is it's giving up what has gone before, letting it go. I didn't like it. I made a mess of it. I really did a bad thing. I resent that other person that really did a bad thing. And Lord, I hear that you say, I am forgiven. And what I hear in that is, let it go. That God forgives and affirms who I am, and I no longer need to hang on and restructure that past to make myself look good, which is finally the underlying goal of hanging on to the past. Oh, and just a little side note, you also heard me mention guilt. Healthy guilt is that feeling when you've done something wrong that is a signal, whoops, I've done something wrong, I need to do something about it. That's healthy guilt. Unhealthy guilt is, oh man, I did something wrong 10 years ago and I just feel awful. When we start hanging on to guilt, then it is a way of justifying ourselves. It goes a little like this. If I feel so bad about it, I must really be good. Hear that twist? I feel so bad, so guilty about it, that I really must be a good person. So guilt can be self-justified. Okay. So take that time for confession, for letting go. Whatever's getting in your way with God. And whatever's sapping the energy of your life. In the same way, be aware of those worries about the future. Lord, I'm making too big a deal out of this. I know I can trust you. I'm hoping it comes out okay, but I'm spending all kinds of time worrying about it and figuring about it and so forth. And it's not saying there isn't a place for future planning, but if you find yourself churning over and over and over about the future, it's a waste of your energy and it depletes your vitality and your health. So forgiveness is letting go of hanging on to life, thinking of the future and hanging on to the past. Hell. Okay. Becoming present. Clearing up the stuff that's getting in the way of the relationship. And then the three things. Ask. Get a language for what it is we want to have happen. And let yourself really tune in and say, man, I can be a co-creator of the future with God. What is it I really want to have happen? And I invite you to think first, to pray for yourself. It is not more sanctimonious just to pray for other people. You need some help. You need strengthening. You need clarity. You need vision. So pray for yourself. What you sense you need and what you sense you want. Now that you may say, okay, I can do that. But now I've got to be sure that I say it right. I mean, we Lutherans write out most of our prayers, don't we? So we're sure that it's right in the right language. And sometimes sometimes lay people think, boy, I've got to find the right words. God knows you. And the more you can be open and honest with God and say it any way you want to say it. Now, if you've gotten, for instance, obsessed with winning the lottery, notice. Thank you. Notice this. Pray to God for it. Now, why would I say pray for winning the lottery? That's a very, maybe, selfish thing. Because, get honest with God. If you're spending a lot of time thinking about winning the lottery, and you come to God and say, oh God, please take care of the poor people and make sure justice happens in the world, and you know all those things that I'm supposed to pray for. Where are you in the process? You're not there. Get real. God, this is where I am. A part of me says, I really want to win that lottery. It means so much to me. And a part of me says, hey, maybe that's selfish. You know, talk like Paul. A part of me says this, and a part of me says this. And so, in your talking to God, be real. Even though it doesn't sound too hot, too holy, let it out. Because then God can work with you. If it's like, oh God, I pray for all those poor people, you know, and you hide yourself from the relationship, God can't get to you. God can't work with that stuff. So really to talk it out. Secondly, praying for other people. Become present to those that you're praying with. You just learned a little about becoming present. Get a little past the verbalization. Think specifically. And one of the things I do is I hold the person in my hands. Because I find myself knowing the person. I get a sense of where that person's at, what they need, what they want, and I'm tuning into them, and rather than just praying for what I think they want, I'm trying to tune into really where they at. What is it they want? What is it they need? Now that tuning in process is very important. Prayer is powerful, and we need to be careful that we're not putting our needs on other people. I had a very difficult experience for me. I went to visit a young woman who, in her 30s, about 40 years old, and she had cancer. And so I started praying for her healing. And the more I prayed, the more agitated she became. And what occurred to me is I had never asked her, do you want to be healed? So when you're going to pray with someone or pray for them, ask them, what is it you would like me to pray for? So you really tune in and don't assume that we know what's good for them. Now another caution, I really like group prayer. But if you're in a group that's praying, what I would like to suggest is that you pray primarily for yourselves and maybe for other people. But one of my concerns is that sometimes prayer groups become great places for gossip. Oh, we pray for Susie's husband who's fallen off the wagon and has got all kinds of, oh, really? And we let out all the secrets, and we don't bother to pray for ourselves as though we don't need it. So be careful how prayer is used. It is powerful and sometimes can be used destructively. Now, what I'd like you to do, I'm going to move on to the other two, but I'd like to do it as a process with you. I would like to have you think of something that you would like in your own life, in the way of your own spiritual growth, your own becoming freer as a person, opening up to your capacities and your abilities. Close your eyes for a moment and think of something. As you think of what it would mean to be freer and more open in living your life. Thank you. And so as you have the thought, put it in some words. Is your petition. Now, secondly, seek and you shall find. I liked noting the word seeing. So what I'd like to have you do is image that happening. And think of something very specific now so that you can image it actually. Now I want to be more loving of everybody. Can't image that. I want to love so-and-so. Okay, what does it mean to love so-and-so? What does it mean to do specifically what you thought of? And let yourself begin to image that happening. And lift up that image in that presence with God. See the movement. Feel the movement. And now the phrase, knock and it shall be open unto you. What I hear in that is an act. Act as though your prayer is now being answered. Act. What can you do to begin to live now? Trusting that that prayer is being answered now. And now move to your heart and give thanksgiving that God has heard your prayer and is answering your prayer. Pray with thanksgiving. Always recognize how blessed and how much you are receiving. And then when you're ready, let yourself say the Amen. Not only it shall be so, but it is so. Jesus makes repeated phrases, O ye of little faith. What he's pointing to is, if we expect little, we will receive little. Live your life trusting that God answers prayer, that God is at work, that all things are working together for good who love Him. So let yourself say to your prayer, Amen. Okay, and now I'd like just to reflect on that a moment. I think it's a real challenge for we in the Lutheran Church to move to sharing prayer with each other, prayer for each other, really trusting that what we pray for is going to make a big difference. And so I would encourage you and your congregations to come together with two or three. I know often we have prayer chains, and that's a good thing. I don't want to but I think we also need to support one another in prayer, to think about it, and to pray for each other directly, and pray for others. One idea that I'd never thought of, and I heard a church that's doing it, people have invited the people in their neighborhood, of whatever religion, and all they said was, come together once a month at our house, and we'll pray for our neighborhood. And they said, people are coming. What a neat ministry. Okay, any comments or questions?
In the Catholic Church, our congregation is often very huge. Our church is 4,000 families. So what we do is get together in little Christian communities. And that way, you know, if there is a need in your small Christian community, you can tell the pastor or whatever, but it's just too, it's impossible for one pastor to handle 400,000 families.
Yes.
And these little Christian communities are really a good thing.
Hear that, folks. The Catholic Church is forming small Christian church communities. I spent 9 months training people at a large Catholic parish in how to form and lead and have small church communities. And what's exciting is they're saying the church is present in these communities. You are the church, you know. It's relaxing that sense of hierarchy as though we're the only place where the church is. And people are becoming excited about that sense of being being the church and having a significant role. Our time is up, so thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.